AgriFutures Australia acknowledges the First Nations people of Australia as the traditional custodians of the lands and waters on which we live, learn and work. We pay our respects to past, present and future elders of these nations. Our head office is located in the lands of the Wiradjuri people of Australia, and we acknowledge them as the traditional custodians of the lands and waters of the region.
This is AgriFutures On Air, brought to you by AgriFutures Australia, driving innovation in Australian agriculture.
Hello, this is AgriFutures On Air and I'm Jane Cudahy. The annual AgriFutures Australia Rural Women's Award acknowledges the significant achievements of women from rural communities and industries by identifying, empowering and celebrating their forward-thinking initiatives. The Western Australian finalist Michelle Moriarty has an incredible story. Suddenly widowed with small children in April 2018, the Western Australian managed to channel the devastating emotions she was experiencing into creating a support network and counselling service for those experiencing similar grief and upheaval. In its very nature, grief is so unpredictable and personal, and yet Michelle has tailored her Grief Connect program and also her grief language project into something different for each individual. Like her other state and territory peers, Michelle has received a $15,000 grant from Westpac, the platinum sponsor of the award, which will aid her in rolling out her program for businesses and families across the nation. In this episode, we'll hear how Michelle, who is a registered social worker, orchestrated a life-changing experience for Australian widows. I'd love for you to tell me a little bit about Grief Connect and how it came about.
We're through Grief and Connect to provide grief and bereavement support services. And there's three different services under there: counselling, widow support, and also the Grief Language Project. So the mission for Grief Connect is that no one across Australia grieves alone. Grief Connect came about, and I founded Grief Connect in May last year. My late partner, Nathan Johnston, died 5 years ago in 2018. And this was the biggest shock to my life. And I had a 2-year-old and 6-year-old that I needed to support through that. And that was in addition to managing my own grief and having to continue on with regular life, because I was here to continue on, you know, putting food on the table, keeping the roof over our head, and interacting in daily life. So it was really challenging. I was absolutely devastated and I went into a huge period of shock. And I was very fortunate in that I had a lot of family, friend and community support. My family were amazing and really supported me through childcare, etc. But despite having so much support, I just felt really isolated and alone. So I ended up meeting with another widow in Bunbury and had this amazing chat with her, which was ended up being a few hours worth of chatting. And I realised that I needed to meet other people that had the shared experience of becoming a widow, because that connection that I had with her and also seeing that she'd survived. And not only had she survived, but she was thriving and doing well and being able to get on with life while still honouring her person. So I guess it was great role modelling for me to be a part of. And from that point onwards, I ended up creating a Facebook group. So we started with a membership of 4. Now there's over 340 young widows across WA in that group. So that group has just naturally evolved. And I had no idea that there were that many widows, 340. But in fact, there's actually 1,029,142 widows across Australia. And that's of all ages.
Yep.
So the number of us out there is significant. So if then we fast forward to September last year, my dad died suddenly. And my mother and I are devastated because I'm an only child and it was very close to my dad. And from that point, I realised as well, we need an over 55s widow support group. That's how the over 55s widow support group started.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Michelle, I think we just need to stop for a second, because you're rattling through all of these things so quickly. And they're actually these really big moments and achievements and, you know, processes all at once. So I just want to go back a little step before we continue on and just ask, because, you know, grief obviously is very different for everyone and affects people really differently. But, you know, you're focusing on widows here. How is losing a spouse or a partner a different grief to losing, say, a close friend or a child? Like, is the grief itself different?
Grief is very individual. So how I grieve for Nathan or how I grieve for my dad, Neville. It's all very individual. So everyone does it differently and it's not comparable either. So it depends on the type of relationship, how strong that relationship was, how often you'd see that person. There are lots of variable factors in each grief. It's that very difficult to compare because grief isn't, we're all human and we're so unique in how we operate. So everyone does it differently.
When you set this group up, it was initially for people like you that have been widowed. Were the people that were reaching out, were they majority female, or did you find that there were just as many male widows who really needed that support as well?
Yeah, so there's men and women in both groups, and both equally, the men and women are both involved in contributing to the groups and attend the catch-ups. And yeah, it's certainly, when it comes to grief and widowhood, there's no judgment. There's no difference. We really respect each other's opinion and experience. And our conversations, and this is what I love the most about meeting with other widows, is that we have really raw, brutal and honest conversations, and it's a safe place where we can have them, because quite often we discuss things that most people don't have to deal with, especially as a young widow, you know, what to do with your person's ashes, or, you know, those kinds of difficult conversations, or repartnering is also brings a whole bunch of new challenges. So, and they're really difficult conversations to have, but within our groups, they're not difficult because we all get it.
I was going to say, it's like an instant icebreaker then.
Oh, it's true. It's just an instant connection. As soon as we realise we're other widows, that connection is just so strong. And that's where the power in the therapy comes, is just being human and connecting to other people who get it.
So how do the groups work? You've mentioned catch-ups and groups and that sort of thing. So do you put people together, or it's one big group, or do you sort of stream put people together on locations, or?
Yep. The groups are peer support groups. So we are all equal in the group, and we're all equally responsible for our own grief and also to care for each other. So when we meet, it's up to any group member to create an event. And this is where the best part about it is that if you're living in a rural and remote location, you can create an event in your area in a public space, such as, for example, if there is a coffee shop, or if there's a park, or if there's a public space there that's somewhere that's appropriate to meet, you can create that yourself and create a space where you can meet other people. So anyone can do that in the group. And we've had meetings in and catch-ups in Perth, at Bunbury. We've had them at kids' parks. We've had them at coffee shops. We've had them at family restaurants. We've been out for evening dinners with no children. We can create and make it how we want. That's the best thing about it.
And it can be as, like, do you do any remotely, or is it, or do you find that these sessions do work better when they're face-to-face?
Yeah, so certainly the online group, it is a group of its own in terms of support. So the online group, people regularly post, and they'll regularly post things about how they're feeling, or something that's happened, or something someone might have said to them, or they might ask a question, or they might ask information about services and, you know, what has worked for other people and what hasn't worked for other people. So the online support is incredible because it's so open and broad. And also the face-to-face events work really well because you do get that face-to-face connection, and the friendships really become established by attending face-to-face catch-ups.
Obviously, this is a very peer-supported group, but there are other grief support services out there. How is this different, and what about it really resonates with people?
Yeah, well, what works in the group is that shared experience. So we're really talking about raw, honest conversations and sharing and connecting over that experience. What happens when we share like that is it reduces social isolation and improves mental health outcomes.
When you are a young widow, chances are there are young children involved too, such as, you know, in your situation. To keep yourself well would be a priority to be able to support your children through it. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely. I have to be okay. And this is where it's okay as well to reach out to other people and say, hey, I'm struggling here. Can you help me with my kids? Or can you help me care for them? Or can you help me with any other tasks around? So when we are, the person is grieving, it's really important that we push through that sense of I need to be able to do it on my own and break through that and go, actually, I need a hand. I really need some help here, because we need to look after ourselves, number one, so that our kids can be okay as well. And we're role modeling to them as parents. So we're role modeling grief. It's really important that our children understand what grief looks like, so when it happens to them, that they also have opportunity to talk and that they feel safe to have conversations with adults and that it's okay and that they'll be supported through that.
And they probably really enjoy the interaction with other people as well.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure my kids would be happy to have a little break from me. So, you know, and that's okay.
Yes.
You're totally okay.
Look, I'm fascinated with your grief language project because, you know, this is something that's quite close to my heart too, and making sure that what you say to someone is not so much correct, but, you know, supportive more than anything else, even to the point where, once I worked out that you really need to understand whether someone's happy for you to say that person had died or they would prefer to say that they'd passed on. And it's such a distinctive area, but it's really important to the person who's grieving. So tell us a little bit about the language project and how that came about.
So the grief language project came about because from my experience, people didn't know what to do. And to be honest with you, I didn't know what to do either. I didn't know any other people I didn't know anyone immediately in my family that was a widow, let alone a young widow. So it's come from my passion to help educate people around how we manage grief and how we can navigate through it safely and supportively. So the Grief Language Project is presentations and information and will be resources on how we can communicate and support each other with grief language. So we want to become fluent in grief language so that when it happens to us, we know what to do.
So what's the most common mistake that people make? Like what do you, you know, what did you hear that you really wish that you didn't?
I think one of the ones is like, I know how you feel. It's important not to throw in a comparison. And people don't, their intentions are good by saying these things, but it's just really important to have a think about it. When we're talking about grief, just being careful and cautious around saying, I know how you feel because that person in grief, their grief and their world is about their grief at that point in time. And it can become very difficult to empathise with someone who's had an experience that they feel is similar. So sometimes that can actually be harmful. But also, we also know, and that's one of the things I've certainly learnt, is that people's intentions are good when they're talking about, and they're trying to talk to other people about their grief.
Mm. So then what did you want to hear, or how would you like people to talk about it?
So one of the things, especially if we're opening conversation, is to use open questions first. So a closed question is where there's a yes or no answer. Use a question that is an open question, such as, how are you traveling? I think this is a beautiful way to ask someone how they're going, because it gives that person who is grieving the opportunity to take it down an emotional road or take it down a task-focused road, or it gives an opportunity to answer in whichever way they want. And also it doesn't provide any judgments or opinions. It's a very open conversation and way to ask a question.
Tell me a little bit more about the Grief Language Project and how it actually works.
So the Grief Language Project is all about helping our communities, workplaces become fluent in grief language. So I can be contacted and I can tailor any presentation through the Grief Language Project to your organisation or workplace or community group.
And so is it talking mainly about what we were just talking about, what you do and you don't say around people grieving? Or, you know, we had someone, I was involved with a rugby club and we had a suicide in our community, which is, you know, men in their early 20s, which are pretty susceptible to interesting behaviour when something traumatic happens. And we had someone come in and talk to our boys just about essentially this. Would that be the same kind of idea that you're doing here, or is it really talking about language in general?
So it's death-specific grief language that I educate people and talk to people about. And there's so many different types of death, whether it be suicide or long-term illness or accident or trauma-related. I mean, many deaths are trauma-related. So it depends on the type of needs. So if there was a death in a community or within a workplace, or if it was more for educational purposes and general grief, then I can come and present the Grief Language Project to communities and workplaces and corporate organisations, and I can tailor the information to the specific needs.
You are the Western Australian winner of the AgriFutures Rural Women of the Year, so congratulations.
But thank you.
What kind of opportunities does that bring to your world in terms of what you're doing and hoping to achieve?
So the AgriFutures Rural Women's Award that I've won for WA, sponsored by Westpac, it has been life-changing for me to win this state award. In terms of what it's done for me and Grief Connect, I mean, it's fulfilling my passion, is that it's getting community and Australia talking about grief. And it's that acknowledgement and witnessing myself, and not only myself, but all of the other widows and all of the other people across Australia who are experiencing grief. It's acknowledging our grief, which then normalises it and makes us think, oh, actually, grief is a normal human process. Because I think we've just become so used to, oh, don't talk about that death, or don't talk about the grief, because it's hard and it is uncomfortable. But what AgriFutures and Westpac have done is make this become a safe conversation to have. I'm really grateful. really grateful for this acknowledgement.
Yeah, and I can hear it in your voice. At the moment, you know, most of the work you're doing is in Western Australia. Is it transferable to other states? Like, can you see the potential for expansion here?
Oh, absolutely. So Grief Connect is Australia-wide. So anyone can access my services, whether it be counselling, widow support groups, and the Grief Language Project. I'm able to travel, and also looking at providing resources online and extending out Grief Connect services, especially to meet the needs of rural, regional, remote people living in those areas, because it's even more isolating living out in rural areas than in the metro areas.
A lot of this, as we mentioned, is peer supported. There'd be some cases, though, that maybe the peer support isn't enough and they need some extra services there. Is there scope to refer them, or, you know, help them find someone who can help them a bit further down the track?
Oh, absolutely. So if I'm speaking to anyone through the counselling service that I provide, I can provide direct referrals to services. And within the widow support groups as well, if someone puts a post on there asking a question about, hey, what services helped you, you know, what's worked for you or hasn't worked, you know, the group members then can chip in, especially if they're living in that local area. Quite often people have a lot of information about great services that are out there. And there are so many. And I mean, as a social worker, I pride myself on making really good referrals out, because it's so important to have each aspect of our life supported and covered as we go forward.
It's just incredible work that you're doing. And considering that it started from something that was so horrific for you and your family at the time, when you were, you know, percolating on this idea right back at the beginning, did you ever imagine it would flourish like it has?
No, absolutely not. I was in the Women's Weekly the other week. It was very surreal. And Grief Connect Services and our widow support group, and Sonia from our widow support group, who's amazing as well, just, you know, I could never have imagined that we would be acknowledged as a group, that widows as a community would be acknowledged to such a, to how it has worked out. I mean, I'm really appreciative of that, because it's life-changing for us on the ground that are going through it and experiencing it.
A lot of grief, and what you've been talking about here, is supporting people through it. Sometimes, you know, people will say something or something happens and friendships or connections don't make it through. How do people who are supporting people through grief ensure that what they're doing is helpful?
Well, I think one of the keys is asking the question. It's quite easy when you're supporting someone who is grieving to avoid, you know, not reach out when you think you might. And I really promote listening to your intuition. So if you know someone who's grieving and you keep thinking about them and wondering how they're going, act on that. Send them a text message, give them a call, hop around with a meal. Instead of avoiding, really reach out, because that is the stuff that is life-changing, and that is what connects people to each other. And it gives us hope to move forward, to know that you're in a community that cares. Asking questions is so important. So the other thing you can ask is, especially if emotions are tough or you don't know what to say, one question that can be helpful is, what tasks do you need help with? Do you need to make any phone calls? Do you need a lift to the doctors? Would you like to go for a cuppa? Would you like me to come to your house for a cuppa? You know, asking some questions around practical things that you can do, and the person who is grieving can then respond. And the other thing is, if they don't respond, that's okay. It might mean that their grief is so big and overwhelming at that point in time, but keep checking in on them. So even if they don't respond, just follow up with another text message anyway. Because those ones, those follow-up messages, even if you don't have capacity to respond at the same that time, those follow-up messages mean so much.
They really do. I've actually found myself on a few occasions too actually just saying, I don't know what to say. Like when you, it's at the point where you're just so overwhelmed sometimes. I don't know what to say. And sometimes that is actually the icebreaker as well.
That is a perfect thing to say because you're acknowledging your feelings and you're also saying to the person who's grieving, yeah, I don't know what to say, but I want to help.
Yeah, like, I'm here. I'm that, with you. I just don't know what to say.
Yeah, it's that acknowledgement. So even saying, I don't know what to say, is an acknowledgement of grief. Can follow up with, you know, I'm here to help, and let the conversation flow from there. And the person who's grieving can also help guide you where to go. But putting it out there and putting that care out there and that connection line out there is just really important. And it's okay to not know what to say because it is awkward. Grief is an awkward, uncomfortable conversation because that stirs up sad emotions and lots of other emotions. But if you notice how you feel at the end of a conversation, you'll probably notice that all anxieties, well, most of anxieties, there will be some relief around that. And there'll be some relief around the sadness because just having someone chat with you about it can ease that overwhelming sense of grief.
And this is it is a personal question because, you know, as you mentioned, your dad did die not too long after your own partner.
Mm.
At that stage, you had this idea about the support service around it. Do you feel like you dealt with that differently to, say, to losing Nathan?
Yeah, so my grief for my dad is very raw still. Nathan died 5 years ago and my dad died only last September.
Mm.
And both were sudden deaths. I've dealt with them differently because my relationship with both of them obviously is different. And there's, I suppose I've also been well rehearsed in what to do. So Nathan's death taught me how to manage my own grief and what I need to do for self-care and to make sure that I can still dip into my grief and allow my grief to flow when it presents. Because the other thing that is true for both deaths that I've experienced is that grief is so unpredictable. It's not linear. There's no timeline. And it's so unique and different for each person. And so I can't predict my own grief apart from having some rough ideas around, for example, event dates are always tricky. It's always a tough time. So what I do and what I promote, and this is part of the Grief Language Project as well, is, you know, planning for event dates, because event dates, when it comes to missing our people who have died, no matter what the relationship, event dates are usually pretty tricky, like Christmas, Mother's Day, Father's Day, Easter, birthdays. So for me, it's around planning and making sure whatever I plan, the opposite of that is I have an exit strategy so I can always return back to a safe place if I need to be on my own or if I'm feeling overwhelmed that I don't want to be around lots of people or around. There's always a few plans that I have for myself for each event date. And that's really about that self-care and learning what works. And I learned this as well through my experiences, only my grief, around what works and what doesn't work.
That is an incredible self-awareness, really. Like, that's just a lot to manage. But as you say, like, that it happens and you need to do it. How did you support your children through that? So when you were talking about event days, there's the plan for yourself and your own self-care and your exit strategy. How much do you have to consider the kids as well? And do they come on the exits with you?
Yeah, hugely. So I have to consider them all of the time. That's my job.
Yeah.
So, and I do. So it depends on the event date and it depends how I'm traveling and they're traveling as to what I decide for them and what's in their best interest. Super important that our kids can have conversations. So I make sure that my kids, if they want to have a chat about Nathan or Pop, which is my dad, then we can have those chats. And I check in with them regularly around that. We do a lot of storytelling and story sharing and we recall memories. And, of course, there's so many happy memories that we can recall and talk about. And by doing this, we're helping our children form their own little identities around who they are, where they've come from, who their family is, which is so important for their self-esteem and for their knowing, you know, their own sense of identity.
Michelle, we've spoken about the you know, some of the ways to support it. It is all about talking, but, you know, crying is a massive element of that too. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so, well, crying is such an important part of grieving, and it can be important because what it does is it releases chemicals in our brain that do help us to feel better. And some people are really outward with their grief. Some people are very inward, and we all do it differently, let's face it. And some people don't cry at all, and that's okay. And some people cry a lot. But I think as a society, we're very fearful of tears because we become uncomfortable and we don't like to see our fellow humans sad. But also, as a part of grief, it is okay that we cry. And it's so important that we are able to sit with each other while someone is crying and allow that to happen. And it may be that we don't know what to say when that happens because we can't fix people. But also, it's okay to sit in silence when we need to and allow someone just to be and sit with them in that space of being sad, because that again comes back to the acknowledgement and witnessing of grief. And that's the power in being able to move forward. That's what helps us to be able to do that. So crying is certainly something, you know, don't panic when it happens. It's a part of our human makeup to cry. And it's okay if we need tissues or we need a box of tissues to go through. You know, and one thing for me, after Nathan died, I cried rivers. I didn't realise that it was actually possible to cry as much as I had ever cried, and tears just would flow and flow and flow. And I guess that was a huge learning piece for me around what grief meant, what it could look like. But again, also my experience of grief, it might not be the same as everyone, and other people might not need to have cried like I did. And that's okay. And now I'll sort of dip in a lot. I'm really good at managing my grief, and I can dip in and out of my grief, and I cry. I think one of the things also, I talk a lot about grief and I'm able to do that, but I also make sure that when I need to, I take that self-care time and cry and allow myself to go through that grieving process.
And you're so right, like that being with someone in that space, it's difficult but so important. You don't need to fill all the quiet moments with pearls of wisdom or you know, the perfect thing to say. It is just okay to sit there and, you know, wipe their hair out of their eyes. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
The other thing too is using names around grief. I've found in my experience sometimes that people have a hard time using names, again, just being awkward around, you know, addressing what's happened. Do you find that it is, you know, important for people who are grieving to have that acknowledgement of using the name of the person they've lost?
Yeah, so I think firstly it's always important to take in cultural considerations, because sometimes some cultures it's not appropriate to use a name.
Yeah.
However, for myself and from a lot of the people that I have met, naming our person and saying their name is really important. So if you're not sure or whether to do that or not, it's okay to ask the person who's grieving what they would like. Is it okay that I speak about your person, or would you like me to not do that? You know, there's different things you can do to ask and different ways you can ask, but just clarify that first if you're not sure. For me, talking about Nathan is so important. It's such a release, and it's an acknowledgement of his life. We get to celebrate and honour his life by saying his name and telling those fabulous stories about his incredible life.
And I think that's what I was trying to allude to before, with not being afraid to ask people about how they want you to refer to death too. Like, it is, some people find it so jarring, but it's important to know what makes them feel comfortable.
Yes, yes. Just ask a question. So important.
It takes a lot of the awkwardness out before you even know it's there.
Yeah. And once you know, then you can freely flow. Like, once you take and you have that answer and you're clear on how you can work and how you can go with this person, it just makes things so much easier, because then you might find it's really easy to process your own grief and support them through theirs, because now you can talk about them whether you say their name or not.
That's right. I think what you're doing is amazing. So, Michelle Moriarty, thank you so much for your time today on the AgriFutures podcast, and all the very best for the next round of the AgriFutures Rural Women's Award.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That was Michelle Moriarty, the Western Australian finalist for the AgriFutures Australia Rural Women's Award. Tickets for the September 12 gala dinner are on sale now. Visit agrifutures.com.au for more information. There's conversations with all of our state and territory finalists on our website or on the podcast platform that you use. They are an inspirational bunch, so please check them out. They're united in their encouragement for any regional, remote or rural women who operate an interesting or innovative business to get involved. So please watch out for the opening of online applications for the 2024 AgriFutures Rural Women's Award. They'll open on Wednesday, the 30th of September, 2023. That's the day after the gala dinner. Thanks for listening. I'll talk with you again soon. I'm Jane Cudahy.
You've been listening to AgriFutures On Air, a podcast brought to you by AgriFutures Australia. For full access to a huge backlog of stories on Australia's agricultural trends and innovations, research outcomes, inspiring stories from our rural leaders, and insights into new and emerging rural industries, please subscribe to AgriFutures On Air on your favourite podcasting app. You can also find more information at our website, agrifutures.com.au.